On tonight's show, we have something special, something that has been on my mind and Thomas's mind for quite some time, as over the past couple of months, there's a lot going on in our country, from the pandemic to racial injustice.
And so we kind of asked ourselves, you know, how can we here at the Bench Boys podcast be a part of that change?
And tonight, you know, we have been told it starts with a conversation. And so tonight we want to have a conversation with some phenomenal guests.
And so we are now excited to be joined by two phenomenal coaches, both phenomenal on the court and known for being phenomenal off the court. Coaches at South Alabama women's basketball head coach Terry Fowler and Coastal Carolina women's head basketball coach Jada Williams.
We hope that this episode, this conversation, it leads to something good. Simply put, a better understanding. You know, our goal tonight is simple. It's to understand each other and understand what is happening in this world and how sports can impact the conversations that need to be had.
So without further ado, Coach Terry Fowler and Coach Jada Williams.
The only thing inevitable is change. Like, change is going to happen, and it's just those that are going to be able to adapt with those changes. So,
well, I think there's a lot of change that has to go on in this country right now. And as we pivot from COVID-19, which is a global, something that affects people globally, I think there's something here in the nation that has been going on over the last, recently come to light over the last couple of weeks, just with all the peaceful protests and everything that are going on out of the killing of George Floyd. But this is why we brought you guys on, because I think Thomas feels too, that we have to have uncomfortable conversations in order to better understand people. And for me and Thomas, we don't understand. We don't have the experience. And so that's why, you know, what we're going to start discussing here is those uncomfortable conversations. But we want to accomplish something just very small, and that is to simply just better understand each other. And I think, the first question that I want to ask both of you guys is, was there ever a time in your early life where you experienced, you as an athlete, as a person, just some sort of type of racism in your life, if you feel comfortable talking about it? And was there a time where it kind of hit you, and what kind of happened after that? Either one of you.
Well, Coach grew up in the 20s, so I'm going to let him go first.
He's going to use that in recruiting against me. That's not But, you know, for me, you know, as a kid, you know, probably one of my first encounters, you know, I guess I would see it when I played Little League baseball. I mean, some of those things, you know. Great, talented black kids, but they wouldn't get picked on the all-star teams. You know, it'd be one, you know, and maybe two. And I remember one of the teams made it to a Little League World Series, and they only had one black player. And our town really was like tried to get him and his family to boycott, don't play because you're the only one. And there were other players who were deserving as well. But, you know, his family, they love this. He's earned this. And so he goes on and plays. So that's one of those kind of things. I saw it in that. And then I was fortunate enough, as I got older, I was able to be on some of those all-star teams. And it got better. It was more than just me. It was other players. But one of the things that, you know, kind of having an encounter with the police, one of the first things that ever happened to me, I'm 12, maybe 13, and we are hanging out at our junior high school with a friend of ours who took band lessons. And so we just rode our bicycles, went up with him. And so our bicycles are parked outside of the school. And as we're leaving from his lesson, we're kind of running through. Well, someone had called the police and you know, said we had broken into the school. You know, they had no idea who it was. They just saw the bicycles outside. It was about three of us. And we're running, and we turn the corner going to the auditorium, that was out, you know, heading out to our bicycles. And two police officers are standing there with guns drawn. You know, and I just, you know, I remember throwing my hands up and just kind of like, wow, you know, what's happening here? And I guess they didn't realize we were kids either. They just, you know, and then once they realized, you know, they had to go back and take us to the band director and, hey, yeah, they're good, whatever. But that was one of those moments for me, you know, as a young person. But you know, and being older and recruiting, I mean, I can talk about out recruiting and being with one of my white female assistants and getting pulled over, not pulled over, we were at a checkpoint.
Okay.
And you know, I mean, the police come in and shine the light on me. They shine the light on her on the other side. They got both of us in it. And I mean, thank goodness we both had on the school shirts on and stuff. And cause I, you know, a black guy with a white girl in a rural part of the state, and wow, you know, who knows what's going to happen. But luckily, the first thing I'm saying, hey, I know to put my hands up. I'm trying to get my driver's license and all that stuff. I got my hands. Hey, look, we just came back from a recruiting trip. We're heading back. You know, we hadn't been drinking, you know, because they were just checking for DUIs, you know, on a Friday night. But anytime I see the blue lights, man, that is scary, man. I mean, it really is. You know, I've had friends get pulled over, and you think it's just a routine traffic stop, and you're done, and they got them in handcuffs, you know, for a speeding ticket.
Wow.
And so the blue lights can make your heart drop, you know, and so that's a scary thing.
Coach Williams.
Yeah, you know, I think my story would be a little bit different because I was born and raised in Miami, Florida. And so being born and raised in Miami, Florida, everybody's, you know, from somewhere else. It's a melting pot. I had no clue about any of this. And then I chose to go to college in Los Angeles. Again, another very diverse place. And so I thought this is how the world was. And then I became a professional. And that was my first taste of, wow, I'm different. I'm black. Like I'm a minority. I am, you know, all of the isms that go with it, I had no idea about as I grew up, well, growing up or even being in college. You know, it just was, I thought everybody had the mindset, everybody was like me, I guess, grew up in that sense. And, you know, it was really interesting to adapt to it in the corporate world. And I've loved all, let me tell you, I'm going to preface it by saying I've worked, every single coach that I had the opportunity to work for is a Hall of Famer. And they are all first class people. So I do not want, you know, the small experiences to even get in the way of that. They are incredible human beings that I still have conversation and dialogue, and they still mentor me to this day. But I will say, you know, there are isms in our sport that you figure out along the way. Oftentimes our young African Americans are labeled as what? The recruiters. A lot of time they're labeled the ones that can babysit or make the team feel good. You know, I've had, you know, there's been several experiences through this, but you know, one of the things that I think stick out when Coach was talking about one of his head coaching things, as a head coach, you know, I've had a pretty diverse staff. However, probably maybe the first 4 or 5 years of my head coaching career, I was always one of my non-African-American assistants was always the one that asked, aren't you the head coach here? You know, they were always addressed as the head coach before I was. And You know, it's not anything that is screaming loud or any of that stuff, but those are the things that a lot of African-American coaches deal with that just kind of just say, it is what it is. That's just the way it is, you know? And honestly, probably when I get like 50 or 60, I wouldn't mind people guessing some other way. But you know, that's the reality of what we've had to grow through. Now, fortunately for me, when I talk about a lot of young African-American coaches, and I'm speaking for them because I've had the opportunity to mentor a lot of them through this COVID, through mm-hmm. Zooms and stuff. Fortunately for me, the people that I had the opportunity to work with, they said, we want you have more than that in you. I want you to be more than a recruiter. They allowed me to learn positions. They allowed me to do scouting reports. They allowed me to learn the X's and O's. They allowed me to mentor academics and have my hands in different things. Like, I was very fortunate to be able to do that. But that is something that is very loud and proud. What's also interesting is just even in our sport, a lot of, you know, a lot of African-American coaches, you know, are the, you know, defensive group. And I love defense, don't get me wrong, but I think that's probably why early on in my career I was really focused on that. I think that's why we ended up finding more success because of the focus on defense. But early on in my career, it was always, I want to prove that I could do more than that. And so that's why we were so offensively proficient, was because of that. And so of course you've got your, you know, your isms. It's different. It's different when you look around and you're the only face in any of the corporate, places. And, you know, that's no disrespect. I work for the greatest institution in the Sun Belt, right, Coach? I work for an awesome, awesome place. But the reality is you look across America and you look at the administration, you look at the campus, and there's not a lot of diversity in those places. And it's not because people are prejudiced. I don't believe that in my heart. I actually believe that fundamentally anyone that's involved with athletics, because there's so many different type of student athletes that walk through, they have to have a heart of service to all people. But the reality is, you know, you hire who you're comfortable with and who you've seen your whole life. And for me, it's nothing for me to hire anyone because I grew up with all of them. But if you haven't, then that becomes I don't know if it's silent bias is the correct term, mm-hmm. But it is something that happens. And so then, you know, it's really hard to understand different frames of mind, different mindsets. It's really difficult to understand, you know, Coach Fowler and his background if you're only listening or bouncing ideas off of people that sound, talk, think the exact same way. You understand? And mm-hmm. So the way that I think that I'm hoping that this changes is that we understand that there has to be more diversity across the board in decision-making positions, and not just because they're Black or whatever the case may be, but because we can serve our student athletes, we can serve our institutions in a much better way when there are more diverse thoughts on the table. You know, Coach Fowler, I know Coach Fowler, he coaches his staff the same way that I do. Like, it's not just one thought that goes into anything. Like, of course, as the visionary, you have your idea, but we allow our assistants to have a lot of input because we pay them. Five brains are better than one. Maybe somebody has something that you haven't quite thought of. And that's what I would love for the Sun Belt to open their minds to, the diversity across their boards. I would love for, you know, all of our universities across America to realize, like, I know you guys are about Black lives. You're about every life. You're about all of these student athletes. I think we need to show them with our leadership.
Coach Fowler, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, no, I agree with what Coach said. And you know, and look, life is about experiences. So everybody's got a different experience, you know, You know, I can, for me to get into coaching, you know, I started Spring Hill College, and I've been fortunate, blessed. I mean, the two previous head coaches there were African-American men. I was the third, you know, so there was no bias. That was a welcoming environment that they welcomed me into, you know. This is the third time I've had interactions with Dr. Erdman here. You know, he was an associate AD when I was an assistant at South Alabama. Then he hired me in North Alabama, and he hires me back here. So, you know, I know him. I know his heart. I know where he's at, and he's given me opportunities. And so, again, I just think one of the things what our student athletes need to see are people that look like them more in the stands, more when they have the opportunity to go to a booster club function or some type of gathering where you're bringing them in to speak or whatever. They need to see more people that look like them. We need to do a better job of recruiting minorities as corporate sponsors, as booster club members, as season ticket holders. They need to see more than their family and their teammates' families when they are at the game, you know. And so, you know, that's one of the things I always try to push for. You know, what season tickets look like for minority sales? What's booster club look like? You know, and so those are things I think we can push for and try to do better. And again, you know, again, diversity across the entire university. And like I said, I feel like I work at a great university. I mean, I think South Alabama does a great job. I'm excited about where we're going to move forward just globally, you know. So, again, this has been a thing that has taken off not just in the United States. It's, you know, you got protests in London, you got everywhere. So,
Zealand, everywhere. They're just, you know, I think, yeah, it's everywhere. And I'm you know, really proud of the steps that, you know, we are taking. And I just pray it's something that this generation can push, and equality isn't even a thing of, you know. I pray that, I've got a couple kids that want to coach. I tell them all the time, I pray that you can get to institutions where you're not the first and the only anymore. Like, let's push past that, and then let's truly get to, okay, great, you were the most qualified, the best, you know, for this job, and you're just a great coach. Like, that's what I'm excited for. I think the conversation is so needed, and I'm super glad it's happening.
Do you guys feel, I mean, both you guys are successful, prominent Black head coaches in your right now. Do you feel like you guys are kind of toting a flag right now, and that you're like a mentor for these, for every athlete? I mean, Black athletes, just that it can be done. I mean, do you guys think about that on a daily basis, or does it ever come into your mind? And then do you kind of alluded to it. You talked to your players that were trying to be coaches, Coach Williams. Is that something that you guys think about?
For me, you know, not only am I a Black coach in the women's game, I'm a
Black man.
A Black man coaching in the women's game, and that number is even smaller, you know. You know, once you get outside the HBCU, and so I've had several conversations with some young assistant coaches that are trying to get, you know, they've just reached out to me to pick my brain on my path and what I thought. So I really take pride, but really I'm carrying the flag, and I need to make sure that they are given opportunities by the way I carry myself. So I really stick to that. I, you know, my character, you know, you're trying to win basketball games, but there's one thing about it. It's how you behave and how you act, so that people don't label and say, well, we can't hire him because Tier Fowler, he messed it up for everybody else. That's not going to happen, okay? And so I take tremendous pride in the role that I play in helping other minorities who aspire to be head coaches to try to reach their goals.
One thing I will tell you guys, Coach Fowler is a, you know I give him crap all the time, but he's my big brother. I think I can do that. But he's a man of integrity. He's extremely intelligent, a family man, a man of God. He knows what he's doing. He cares for his kids. He cares for his staff. He's won everywhere that he's gone. And he's a damn, black, white, otherwise, he's just a damn good coach. And you don't have to edit that part out. I said what I said. I just think not only coach, but person. And he's an excellent role model for, anyone. And so all you Power Fives that are listening, come get his butt. No, I'm just kidding. No, he's a great guy. And so an excellent role model, not only for me, I watch what he does, study the game. You know, I look up to him in a lot of ways, even though I give him a hard time, you know. Not just as a black man, but just as a coach person, period. And I think we do need more of him in this game. We do need more people like him to have more opportunity. I think for me, I'm super passionate. I think my calling, I think one of the things I, besides competing, anyone would tell you, I love to compete. Like I'll compete in anything. It's pretty sad. I'll compete in pretty much anything. You tell me you can beat me at something, I'm going to want to try to do it. And then I'm going to want to try to keep going. But for me, I think outside of that competitive edge, I think something that I do believe the calling is to show that, Don has started it all for us in terms of African-American women. Harlan Peck started it for Vivian Stringer. Sorry, let me go back to the GOAT. Vivian Stringer put us all, on. And she's also made it a mission to know that our calling is bigger than basketball. We love basketball. We're going to compete in basketball, but it is to open doors. It is to motivate. It is to give people a dream to know that we can aspire and we can be more. And so anytime, one of the things that I love to say is I want everybody to be in a position to win, except when they play Coastal. But I want everyone to be in a position to win. And I really, really mean that. And for my student athletes, I want them, it's so funny, the way that we run our program, usually when people come in, they're like, because I want my girls to have a voice, albeit right, albeit wrong. I want them to stand strong and be able to stand in what they say and what they believe. Now, of course, as a coach, I'll come back behind, but I haven't gotten on a kid for saying, coach, this is what I believe. Okay, well, I'm glad that is it. But, and I want them to not feel timid when they are, in any authority figure space, or any authority figure's place and be strong in what they say. And so, it is a calling, and I do understand what Coach Terry's talking about, is sometimes the pressure of being the first is tough, because sometimes you're like, I don't want to mess it up for anyone else. I read Mrs. Obama's book, and I went to one of her talks, and she talks about the very last time she stepped on Air Force One. For the last time as the first lady. And she just wept. And not because she was going to miss being first lady or any of that stuff, but because the pressure that you feel to make sure that you are excellent at as good as you could possibly be at everything. That's a real life struggle. I think that all, Coach, I don't know, would you agree with that? That's a real life struggle that a lot of African-Americans that are in these positions is like, that can be suffocating sometimes. In a real life, I can't breathe, because you understand that you don't have as many opportunities, and it's statistically proven. You don't have as many opportunities if you fail or stumble as our counterparts do. And so you are stuck in this, I have to be as perfect as I possibly can be so that somebody else can have it. So number one, you can continue to coach. And number two, somebody behind you can have that opportunity as well.
Coach Fowler, do you have anything else to add to that?
No, I agree with that. I mean, I definitely agree with what Coach said, that, it's you're just trying to do your best. And again, the statistics lay it out that an African-American coach who was let go, the chances of them getting rehired as a head coach are not as high as our counterparts.
So we've talked about having people that look like you in the stands. We've talked about having people that look like you at these booster meetings. And that for the athletes there, that's – you were suggesting that as a way to improve relations between people of all races. Is there any way that – is there any sort of example that you could give that we could do that at the coaching level, so to speak?
You know, there's a lot going on right now. You got a lot of coaches, association kind of banding together and doing things to, again, mentor each other and just give the opportunities. Again, it's what Coach Williams said. It still comes down ultimately to the people that are making the decision. They have to be calm. Those people have to be put in front of them. In a different sense, not maybe just for the hiring process, but, you know, I think one of the things we try to do, I tell our staff, make sure you're talking to our deputy ADs. Make sure you're talking to all the associate ADs. They're going to be the people that are getting jobs.
Mm-hmm.
That relationship you have with them can carry you a long way. So it's about networking and putting people in front of those current decision makers. And maybe more importantly, the future decision makers. And the more people you have out in front, and they're like, okay, well, now I'm not just picking from this is one minority here. No, there's four or five that I know that I feel really good about, and they're in the process as well. And I think that's the way you do it in the coaching front, is to just put as many people out in front of those decision makers. You know, you need to be having those mock interviews. All those kind of seminars and webinars and things you got going on now, so that they know the people that are out there, the qualified people. Because the decision can't be made during the hiring process. I mean, that's hard. It's done through relationships built up over time.
Yeah. I think that I would say that, you know, I think that we need more diversity as decision makers. I keep going back to that. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, I want to be in the room. I'm so grateful. I tell everybody who listens, our women of color group, I tell them all the time, I'm grateful to have a seat at the table. I want more seats at the table, more decision makers, because I think it makes for an incredible, I think, your workplaces can only go up. I only see positives from being able to have diversity in the workplace. I think that is so important. And I think that it makes for a better student athlete experience, because the student athletes that we have, and I'm just talking about at my university, I don't know every DNA of every university, but the majority of the basketball players that are at Coastal Carolina are of African-American descent or African descent. And so to have people that understand, okay, what could we do to make this a great experience for those students? I think you need the diversity in those positions. And I think that's across the nation. I don't think that it should be a conversation of us just getting in front, like let's diversify our decision makers. And I think that Serena Williams's husband, I think he did a great thing. Read It was his baby. He was a founder of it. He helped grow it. And he decided, I'm going to make a statement and say, I'm still going to be a part of the company, but I'm going to step down from my position. And I want it filled by another African-American person, because I encourage diversity and inclusion. Putting another person that's in a position to be able to make a decision, just making room at the table, everybody's still going to respect him. Her husband, he's a phenomenal, a genius, and going to continue to make tons and tons of money. But I think that's where it needs to start. And are we going to have people that are comfortable enough to make room for others at the table? That is the real discussion. That is the real question. And I will find out We'll find out as time goes on.
Yeah. Colin, I want to add this to that, because I want my student athletes to see people say, I can do that.
Yes.
I don't want them to, all I can do is play.
I'm just
I can go be an associate AD. Oh, I can go be a professor. Yes. They need to see that.
Yes.
You know, I can go be a CEO at an organization. I can start my own nonprofit. What they need to see that. That's our job, to put those people in front of them so that they can see that that's possible. It's not just a dream, but it's actually possible.
What do you guys think? I mean, we've talked about a lot of things, and you talked about diversity, but in college sports, just how can we better the relations between all races of people in college sports? I know you talked about diversity at leadership levels, but what else can be done? I mean, from fans to players to coaches to everybody that's involved with sports, what do you guys, from your experiences, what have you kind of learned? What do you guys think can be done to better just relations?
Well, I'll say what we're doing right now is a great start. Mm-hmm. It's a conversation. I mean, you know, we probably could go on for another 3-4 hours and just, you know, more, you know, but you got to have these conversations. And I think as coaches and leaders, we have to take the time out. You know, maybe we're not going to practice today. We're going to have a conversation about this. We're going to bring some people in. I think your fans need to see your kids for something other than a student athlete.
Yes.
You know, they need to see them as a person.
Yes.
With dreams. You know, they need to know that person's story. Okay. You know, it changes. You know, how you look at me, you need to know their story. You need to know their struggle. And wow. Wait a minute, and she's a 3.8 GPA, and that's our background? You don't know that. You just see them run up and down the floor.
Yeah.
So we've got to have those conversations. We've got to present those opportunities for us to share and dialogue. And it's like what I said, I'm a big believer in this. Life is about your experiences. My experience is not Coach Williams' experience, but I can learn from her experience. I can learn from Collins. Collins can learn from mine. I mean, Thomas, the same thing. But if you don't have those conversations, you never know. You know, I heard Doc Rivers talking about the Clippers during this time now, and they had a Zoom meeting, and they had the entire team. And he coached Tyronn Lue. Tyronn Lue's been on his staff with the Celtics, with the Clippers. And Tyronn Lue tells a story about growing up, and he was like, wait a minute, this is my friend. I've known him for years, and I've never heard that story. You know, and so those are the things. We have to know each other's story, because we're all human beings, and that's the biggest thing with me with race relations and everything. We have to respect the person next to us as a human.
Mm-hmm.
And they have struggles just like I have struggles. And so it's just – those stories have to get out there, you know, and you'll see your media relations. They're trying to tell those stories, you mm-hmm. know, about players. And but then we got to keep taking a step further, you know, and we have to get people willing to share their stories too. Some people don't want to share it because they, you know, either whether embarrassed about it, or they don't want to put it out there, or they're trying to forget about that part of their life, but they don't understand a lot of times that's what's made you who you are right now. That's what shaped you. And it's going to carry you forward because of that experience that you had. So to me, it's the conversations, it's the dialogue. And the one thing we've really put a point with our team this year and our coaching staff within ourselves is we all have to be active listeners.
Mm-hmm.
We all need to, hey, it's eye contact, put the phone away. It's, I'm listening. I hear you. And that's what we all want as human beings. We want to be heard. We want the affirmation. And then we need to reciprocate it.
Yeah.
Coach Williams?
I think that sports is one of the greatest since the beginning of sports. It's one of the greatest tools that we have. I think it is the most unifying tool that we have in any realm out there, honestly. There's nothing, you know, I was looking at my Facebook memories of game 7 of when LeBron James won a title. And, you know, I was looking at that stuff and just how people will come together to either love or hate a certain thing. Like that, it's such a beautiful thing. A coach can attest to this. When you bring kids from different races and backgrounds in, and they have no idea, because again, you know, I have a kid that had, she had been raised around, you know, she had two black people in her graduating class and then comes to our team. And then you have, you know, some of my players who didn't have anyone outside of being African-American. And they're like, whoa, what is going on? And then they have the opportunity to grow and become sisters for life and weddings and friends. And it's the most beautiful thing, I think, where we take the next step. And I think that's why you've seen, you know, the Kobe Bryants be successful beyond, besides him being a great basketball player, people took what he did on the court and they gave him opportunity, not gave him, he earned opportunity outside. Michael Jordan, it was, you're so great here, I'm going to take what I know, give it to you, help you out to be someone better out here. I think that's where we take the next step is, yes, we are all connected in this wonderful thing called sport and competition. It is a beautiful thing. That is where our first opportunity comes. I think the next opportunity is, okay, let's step away from that. Let's let the, Colin and Thomas, this is where it starts. You brought in Coach Fowler and myself to have the conversation. That's where it starts. And then you go out and see how, what else can we do to help diversify this and bring people together. I think that that's where we continue to get better. You guys giving Coach Fowler and I is a beautiful and fun, and we're grateful for this opportunity. For you guys are giving us the opportunity to get our voices out and to get our opinions and just put out what we believe. And that's the next level. It's the next level of providing a platform or giving or letting, hey, this is how I found my way to success or whatever the case may be, take it or leave it here. I'm gonna provide this. I just want to see diversity out here. I want to see us continue to grow and get better. I think that's the next step. I think you enjoy watching the games, you know, that we put on, the athletes that we have out there. But I think this is next level stuff and next step stuff. And I want, my wish is that everyone takes a note out of your book and have more conversation. Have more, all right, you're great here. Let's figure out how to get greater here. I think that's the next step.
Coach Fowler, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, no, I mean, it is. It's the next step. And, you know, one of the things I will piggyback something that Coach Williams said earlier was, is about, you know, our players having a voice and we want that. And we try to empower our kids. And so for, again, you guys have given us a platform tonight and we can't be, you know, I mean, we're so grateful for that opportunity. You know, the fact that you chose us to do this as well, but this is the beginning. And one of the things I told our team when the George Floyd and the riots first started is, so I've been through several of these, not since 1920, like Coach said.
Him and Harriet, I don't know if you know her, Tubman, they were like BFFs.
but I've been through my share of sin, from Rodney King to, you know, Mike Brown and Ferguson, all of that. Mm-hmm. What I challenged our team was, this is the easy part.
Yeah.
This is the easy part. Yep. Protest, write your statement on Twitter, do it. Where are we going to be in 6 months? Where are we going to be in a year from now? Everybody's going to show up for the anniversary, the 1 year anniversary. But where are we going to be? And so we're trying to educate our players on voting rights, just knowing their rights if they're stopped by a police officer. This is the time to educate and to continue the dialogue. That's my hope.
I was going to ask you both. I've seen a lot of coaches. I've seen a lot of universities take it upon that they've gone and they've encouraged their kids to go register and vote. Is that something that you guys as coaches, did you already have that implemented, or is that something that you guys are now encouraging your players to do?
Yeah, we're doing that. That was one of our big things going into it, and then it just got heightened right now. But we were going to do that. We had told our, we're not going to practice on election day. But the thing I told our team was this as well. It's not just showing up during the presidential election. Again, that's easy, every 4 years. If you're going to make real change, it's at the local level. That's where your DAs, you know, the sheriff, your vote, that's where you make the real change. And so, again, it's about educating them and educating myself as well, so that we can make change. I truly feel like change will happen this time. This protest is different. It's been unified. There's different races out there. It's not a lot of people on the sidelines. People are out there. Because at the end of the day, it's human rights. Again, it comes back to what I said earlier. It's just about treating the person next to you, regardless of their skin color, as a human being. And that's all anybody ever wants. You know, I'm not less than you because my skin color is different. I mean, you know, that we're the same, and because we're both human beings, you know. I've got a wife and kids I want to get home to every night, just like the next person does, you know. So it's really about educating, and are we going to stay in the fight? And that's what I'm really encouraging our team to, hey, where are we going to be? You know, we had our team Zoom meeting on Tuesday, and I said, hey, you guys need to get together, and we'll start work. But what is going to be our call to action? What's our action plan? Okay, we made a statement. We had a great team talk about racism, and that thing was awesome, y'all. I mean, that talk within our team was awesome. I mean, what I told our team was this: if you're an outspoken person and you feel a certain way and you have more rage or you display your rage, and then we've got another person on our team that is quiet by nature, they don't have to express their rage like you do. And it's okay. They still have the same, it's wrong, but we don't need to make that person feel less. But, well, she don't feel as bad as I do, you know, and she may feel the same way. She's just expressing it different. And so those are things that tear locker rooms up when people don't respect each other. And so we made a point to make sure that everybody understood. And if you felt a different way or you want, let's have that discussion, because that's what it's about. I always say this when I talk to people and people say things and I'm like, man, I never thought about it like that. And that's the conversation between Black America and White America. That's oh, I never thought about it like that, you know, and oh, I see where you're coming from now. And that's both ways. That's not just, you know, you saying that to me. That's, oh, I see where you're coming from now. Okay, but this is my, and let's have that dialogue and we can come away. It's okay to disagree on things, but let's come to a, you know, where we can have that discussion.
Coach Williams.
So in 2016, I don't know if you guys had the opportunity, but Joe Moglia, our chair of the athletic department, actually took his football team to the voting polls. 100 players took them to the voting polls, which was this presidential election. Mm-hmm. For us, we had done a life after basketball in 2016, and I kicked myself for not doing another one since 2016. Mm-hmm. But we do labs. And so in this lab was life after basketball. And for us, it was actually focused on women's voting rights. And so we kind of talked to our team about, you know, women weren't allowed to vote until, and we kind of talked to them about that. It wasn't even an African or Black issue. It was just about women, you know, having the right to vote and why this is so important. And at that time, we got some of our kids signed up, you know, the absentee ballots. We tried to get them signed up and encourage the voting from there. Since then, I have definitely had a different type of focus on not only the presidential elections, but the primaries, the midterm, all of the elections, and You know, my athletic director, Matt Hogue, said that, you know, they are committed to making sure that our student athletes are educated on, you know, South Carolina, what's going on in the states that they're able to vote in, who's running, you know, because it's bigger than just the president. All of us know that. It's bigger than just the presidential elections. Yep. It's about, you know, your city officials. It's about, you know, the mayors. Those are the elections that they need to be educated about, because though oftentimes what we are writing or upset about are state laws and not necessarily federal laws. You know, there's every once in a while you might get a federal law that stirs up to the pot. But in this case, it's about the state laws. And so our athletic director said he's committed to making sure our student athletes learn about that. And then how about the NCAA? How huge was that announcement that they're going to have Election Day be a mandatory day off for student athletes so that they can exercise that? That's huge. Now, I know all basketball coaches across America were like, that's about a week before our season starts. what is going on here? But all of us understand, I'm sure with the you know, just – I don't care what side of the coin you vote on or for, as long as you exercise your American right, and that is to vote and to have a voice in whatever way that is. I don't care who. I tell our students, I don't care who you vote for. I just need you to make sure you go out there and make sure your voice is heard. So.
My question that I really wanted to ask you guys all night long is really – Not just me as a person, not just Thomas, but what can we do? Like, I mean, I know you talked about conversation, and that's a big thing. But what can we as people that aren't in your shoes, aren't black, what can we actually do in order to make some sort of progress in a thing that's been going on for the last 200 years, 300 years? What can we do as a white person, as a white male, as a white female, just anybody?
Okay, you know, first of all, you know, when you see racism and you're with them, you can't be silent. You know, you need to hold your friends accountable. You know, hey, you know, that wasn't cool here, blah, blah, blah. You know, you need to have that conversation. One thing I've told a lot of my white friends who, you know, a lot of people reached out to me and said some things, and, you know, and hey, what can we, you know, and I'm like, there's a couple of things. One, I appreciate those people reaching out to me.
Absolutely.
But I know your heart. So you didn't have to reach. I know if I felt different about you, if I felt you were different, I felt there was I would have put it, you know, we wouldn't be friends. Okay. We just wouldn't be. Okay. So I appreciate them reaching out. But the one thing I asked them to do, to really understand the police brutality and the prison system and the incarceration rates and all that stuff, is there's a documentary called 13th, and you can watch it on YouTube. Just Google 13th. And you just watch that, and you will understand the oppression and why people feel like they feel right now. If you watch that, you'll be like, okay, I see. I see this, how it's been going for years since slavery, you know, since the 13th Amendment. That's what it's about. It's about the 13th Amendment and how, you know, the 13th Amendment, you know, freed slaves. But then there's a clause in it that says, unless you're a criminal, you're not a free man. You know, if you're a criminal, you're not a free man. Well, you know, in the South, you didn't have the workforce anymore because you didn't have the slaves. And so the police at the time, who were originally just there to catch runaway slaves, they started arresting, you know, freed slaves or loitering, just a little simple crime. And they just put, so now they lost all their rights again. And they just basically put them back to work to get their labor. And then it's just been a systematic thing ever since then. So I encourage them to watch 13th.
So you say like understanding history?
Yeah, I mean, well, understanding the history. And that history is, you know, strictly about incarceration and the police and that system, which is the main driver right now. You know, I've asked our team this. It's not even just about this. All right, are we going to talk healthcare is an issue, you know, trying home ownership, you know, generational wealth, you know, all those things are now tied in, you know, but the driving force right now is, you know, police brutality, incarceration and things like that. So 13th is a great starting point to understand that. And now you understand why people would be like, when they have an encounter with the police at times, why they feel like they feel.
Yeah.
Ms. Williams?
Honestly, I think that, again, I told you guys, I think that this platform means a lot. I will piggyback off of Coach Fowler, who is slowly fading to black back there. I would piggyback off of him, and I would just say anytime that you see it, understand that anytime that you can stop it, if you're not stopping it, then, you know, it is deemed okay. I think the other thing is, I think continuing to use, you know, the platform that you have, you know, to spread light, because everybody listens, you know, people will continue to listen to your podcast as it continues to grow, because I'm speaking, it's going to be one of the greatest ones that we have in sports. And so continue to use that platform to talk about issues like this. I think as you guys continue to grow, make sure you diversify your leadership. You know, I'm always going to come back to that. As you guys continue to grow, you know, make sure you keep that stuff in the back of your mind. I think, you know, as Coach Fowler, we can't go back, but we can always go forward. And I think those are ways, tangible ways to continue to make changes, is just use your power for, you know, the advancement of all. Like, I think that speaks volumes. Once you guys continue to grow, you know, open those internships, diversify those internships, you know, keep making sure that you're mindful of your hiring practices, and who's around and who's around you. Like, I just, those are tangible ways. I think going forward, you can continue to help, you know, all communities. And I think that then, you know, you guys will get different ideas for where you want to go and how you want to network. And, you know, I think it can only add value to what you're already doing.
I feel like we've literally just scraped the top of a conversation like this. But just wrapping it up, this is a question that both me and Tom was just over the last 40 minutes of just been hanging out with both of you guys.
It's been a little bit longer than that, but yeah.
A little bit longer, but it's okay.
It's all right. Coach Fowler's going to fade to black in a second, but it'll be all right.
This is the last question, you know, just hanging out with you guys talking right now, you guys talk about, you know, being like family. How did you two get to be like that? I mean, obviously through coaching circles, but how did you guys get to be where you're this comfortable with?
I'll tell you guys, he followed me to every court when we were recruiting, trying to figure out who we were recruiting.
her first year, they were coming into the league. We're in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I walk up and introduce myself, and I just need to see what you guys doing. We just hung out, you know. And I tell you, it's just grown from the conference meetings. You know, look, I'm sitting in my office and they're finished shoot around, and all I hear is somebody walk in the office. Where's he at? And I'm like, and she just walks in the office. And then look, it's like that, you know. And you know, we go to their place and it's the same thing. And we just hit it off, you know. Yeah. We really did. We just hit it off and just. Yeah. We can talk about anything. We can bounce ideas off of each other. And so that again, great relationship to have. And it's like that in the entire Sun Belt. I'm telling
you. All the time. All the time. I will say, you know, I'm a big believer in energy. And, you know, our girls can tell you attitude, effort, energy. They'll recite that for anybody. And Coach Fowler has such great energy about him. And when I first met him, I was like, oh, wow. And then, you know, this part he doesn't really know. Like, I am, you know, a true student of the game. Like, when someone's excellent, like when we first got in, they were kicking everybody's, you know, backside. And so I'm a true student. I'm like, how does he get his team to do that? So studying his film. So I figured if I get a relationship with him, he'll give me all the secrets. So it didn't work out that way, but that's what I was honestly thinking was, wow, he's really good. Let me figure out, because at that, you know, the year after, you guys ended up having that magical year, Coach. And I was just like, wow, he's incredible. And then some of the people that I've, you know, I've worked for all Hall of Famers, they actually, they know Terry, and they always have nothing but great things to say. And one thing that I know, you surround yourself around winners, the conversation's very different, and winners win, and you find yourself in those situations. So that's why I keep hanging around him, because he wins. So I want to keep figuring out how to do that. And just, you know, when someone is so excellent at what they do, you want to, Kobe Bryant says it all the time in his interviews, like, you know, I don't have the answers, but I'm gonna go find the people that have them and study what they do and try to continue to be greater. So he's a role model to me. He's somebody that I look up to in this business. And so that's why I attach myself to him, whether he likes it or not. I get good banana pudding out of it. And from his amazing, beautiful wife, who is, I just adore.
So what Coach doesn't know, so I'm gonna let you out the bag. We're studying something that they do right now, but I'm not gonna tell you what it is.
We're switching it all up. We ain't doing it no more, Coach. We ain't doing none of that. What you offense? We're
studying it to steal it so we can do it.
We ain't doing none of it. We switched it all up. We changed everything.
We're gonna have another Zoom meeting. We're just gonna bring in all the coaches, and we're all gonna talk about what everybody else does. So everybody, you know, that's what we're gonna do next time. Well, guys, thank you so much. I hope that this was just something for our listeners that just to be able to better understand. We've scratched the surface, I feel like, on the conversation with you guys. But, man, we appreciate just both you guys, what you have done, what all the coaches in the Sun Belt have done, and particularly you guys. And I've kind of taken – from you, I didn't have the answers, and so I thought I'd go to somebody that had some answers, and so that's what we thought of you guys.
Thank you. We
appreciate so much that you guys coming on, and hopefully we can do this maybe again sometime, and maybe next time we talk, it's a better situation that we're in. Hopefully,
hopefully I would have gotten my banana pudding.
Yes, and we're gonna get Terry Fowler a big light stand next time.
You guys get some banana pudding too. I'm just saying,
y'all some stuff to make a draft.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming out tonight, and we truly enjoyed it. Thank you guys.
Thanks for having us, man. We really appreciate it. You guys doing a great job on your podcast, and look, this is just the beginning. Everybody starts somewhere. And I tell you, we're looking for big things out of you guys.
Yes.
And I tell you, before Coach Williams says something, I appreciate what you guys are doing, where you're focusing on the mid-major, you're focusing on, you know, schools you've been at, you know, and man, that's awesome. You're giving us a platform to put out there so people can know about our conference.
And I'll give you guys this. You guys didn't know this. You guys were my very first podcast that I'd ever done. I think hundreds since, like, I feel like I'm on a podcast every other week, but you guys were the very first to ever care enough about my story to interview me. So I will always remember you guys.
That means so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for that. Well, thank you guys for coming on tonight.
And this concludes our two-part interview with coaches Terry Fowler and Jada Williams. Excellent, excellent people, energetic, thoughtful, kind. The list goes on of positive adjectives we can list to describe them, but honored is a word that we can use to describe ourselves, to have them even on and discuss such a heavy, heavy topic. This was what we wanted from the beginning, was to let other people talk, because it's not, the issues that we discussed are not issues that Colin and I specifically have faced. And so to have that perspective, it means the world for us. And we felt that we could not personally do it justice. So we are humbled to have had them on to give us the perspective that we couldn't.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing is we just hope we did it right. I mean, that was our biggest thing, was that, and it was simply that this was a huge topic that is obviously all over the world right now that's being discussed. And it needs to be discussed. And I mean, like, just kind of verbatim to you, you and me don't know anything about that. Like, we grew up in communities that had Black people. Yeah, we grew up in schools that had Black people. I played on teams that I had black teammates. I had black schoolmates. I mean, it was just, but neither of us knew the first hand experience of anything. And I learned a lot. I wish we could do it for another hour. I mean, right. I was ready. The questions that we asked, I mean, obviously you can dive deeper. But I think we scratched the surface. All it takes is a conversation. And if there's anything that you guys get out of tonight's episode as listeners, as people that follow us on Twitter or social media or whatever, it's just you can always have a conversation with somebody. But the biggest thing when you have conversations is not to respond, but to simply listen. Don't respond to it. Listen to what the other person is saying. And I think we can progress so much faster. And that is, if there's anything to take away from this episode, no matter what you thought, just have the conversation and listen to somebody.
And so just to wrap things up tonight, we're not going to push our social media. We're not going to push just our subscription numbers tonight. We encourage you to follow Coach Jada and Coach Fowler. They're both on Twitter. Follow their schools' accounts. Follow their programs' accounts. But to me, it's important, first of all, just to follow up on what Colin said. I know that Louis C.K. isn't necessarily the best role model, but the one thing he said that I think is the best, I guess, tenet to follow in life is that you don't get to tell somebody you didn't hurt them. And so there's no way for an individual to quantify the experience another person has had. And so I have to agree with Colin and with Coach Terry and Coach Jada. Listen, put yourself aside for a second and learn from someone else when you have these conversations.
The only thing I know we said we're gonna push anything. I'll push you to do something. Just if you haven't already, go register to vote, just like what they said. Vote in your local elections, vote in everything that you can possibly vote, because that is the simplest way for you to make change, is go and do that. And if there's one thing, listening and then learning and then making a change. And one of those ways is to go out and vote. And so that's all I'm going to push tonight. We don't need to push anything else. Thomas, you good?
Have a great weekend, everybody.
I'm good. Come on back, guys.